Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to Mazda's focus to ensure every element of a car is designed around the driver. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Today, we look at the trends having the most impact on Charlotte. If you study our history, if you take the long view, one trend is clear. We won't be ignored. We have been aspiring to be something other than what we are since trade and Tryon was a Native American crossroads. We weren't happy being called the trifling place George Washington once referred to us as. In the last several decades, we have grown by leaps and bounds in terms of population and geography. And that has changed everything about us, from our architecture to our expectations. We endured a terrible recession, but bounced back with a vengeance to become one of the fastest growing cities in the nation. Our skyline has changed dramatically, and we've proven naysayers wrong. Before the Hornets arrived the first time, one pundit predicted the only franchise we'd ever get was McDonald's. Well, we showed him, huh? That, too, is a trend. Don't count us out. But there are tons of others, and this hour we look at the trends that got us to where we are, those that are part of our culture today, and those that may take us into our future. Since we're a business town, and since most of these trends involve business, growth, and development, we welcome back our panel of business experts. Tony Mesilla is the editor of the Charlotte Ledger Business Newsletter and a regular on WFAE's BizWorthy segment on Morning Edition. Welcome back.
Morning, Mike.
Morning. Katie Peralta is the senior editor of the Charlotte Agenda. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Daniel Shemtob is a reporter covering economic growth and development in the pages and the, I guess, the web pages, too, of the Charlotte Observer. Welcome to you.
Thank you. Good morning.
And Ashley Fahey is real estate editor of the Charlotte Business Journal. Thanks.
Hi. Good morning.
Welcome. You can join us as well if you'd like to at charlottetalks@wfae.org. That's how you get to us through email, search for WFAE on Facebook, get to us through Twitter at Charlotte Talks. One thing we spend a lot of time doing in Charlotte is talking about ourselves and taking stock of what we have become at any given time. And back in 2009, we did that in a special Charlotte Talks public conversation called Charlotte on the Way to Becoming. And back then, we pulled the tape, back then we asked Charlotteans what they liked about their city in 2009, what they didn't like, and what they hoped we would become going forward. Here's what they said.
I love the changes in Charlotte. I think it's a large, small town. People are very friendly, which I love. The hospitality's here.
I think that it's turning into a more of a real city. It's a place where if you want to pursue something, you're going to get there. Because as opposed to somewhere like Asheville or something like that, there's not much there for you, but there's a lot for young entrepreneurs in this city.
I sometimes think the city might be growing too fast. One thing in particular, if it's growing, the city's growing at the rate that it is, they need to have better roads and not so much traffic, especially on 485.
As long as it doesn't become like Atlanta, we'll be fine.
I think it's already starting to get too big. Traffic-wise, congestion, building. I like to see some more museums, some more culture aspect. I think Charlotte's kind of lacking identity in some ways.
What I don't like is urban sprawl. In certain places, it is really bad, really terrible, to be honest. And there don't seem to be an end in sight.
Okay, so those comments were from 11 years ago in 2009. How much of what they said could be said today if we took a microphone out on the street?
I think pretty much all of them. I mean, I think I've heard all those kinds of concerns and I guess positive and negative things, you know, within the last year. So I would say all those are still relevant and still being thought about by Charlotteans, even though we've obviously grown a lot since then.
How many of the things they talked about wanting have come to fruition?
Well, you know, we've seen a lot of it. I mean, we've seen some of these cultural activities. We've seen a lot of building uptown, various museums. You know, I don't know if you count soccer now as a cultural thing, but it certainly is going to be. We got the DNC, we've got the RNC. We're doing all these things that Charlotte has said it has always wanted, which is going to, quote unquote, put us on the map. That's going to take us out of this sort of second tier city stage and move us really up there into the first class, world class type cities. But I still think there's this mentality that we're still lagging behind a lot of those cities.
We also used to have this conversation about the CH factor. People, you would say Charlotte to somebody from Peoria, and they would confuse it with Charleston, South Carolina, of Charleston, West Virginia, and of course you have to say Charlotte, North Carolina, if you're writing a news story that goes national about Charlotte. Is that still true?
That is still true.
Yeah, that's still true.
Well, how can that be?
Because there's still this, it still exists. If you talk to people on the West Coast, if you talk to someone in California, say, I live in Charlotte, they say, oh, Charlotte, South Carolina? Or where is that exactly? It's not a universally known exactly where it is. And so for clarity, yeah, you still see the Associated Press requirement.
So all these sports teams and the presence of the DNC haven't helped a darn bit.
I think, first of all, I do think today, just like 10 years ago, we define ourselves by growth. We define ourselves by some sort of acceleration instead of what the soul of the city is. And
do we have one?
Well, that's the big question.
It's better than Atlanta.
People's opinions about Atlanta aside, I think Charleston has a very clear soul, even if they are like 10 times smaller than we are. Same with Charleston, West Virginia, a very different vibe. Charlottesville, Virginia, that's another one we get confused with.
Exactly,
you know, instead of being like Charlotte is, you know, a fledgling tech hub and we have a vibrant arts community in certain parts of town, it's like we're working really hard to be the next big thing, but not quite Atlanta. So that truth still really holds true.
The first person who spoke in that clip that we played called us a large, small town. And in that same year, 2009, WFAE conducted a sense of place survey of our listeners who found Charlotte to be, quote, a livable city with a small town feel, cosmopolitan but friendly, and with all the amenities you want, including trees. Are those things still true?
I think they are to a large extent, but it is changing. I mean, even the character of development we've seen in the last 10 years, the types of buyers and the types of investors that have come into Charlotte, the kinds of jobs that have come in have all drastically changed the city. But, you know, the boosters still cite, you know, we have green space and we have trees and we have great weather all year round. And, you know, you can still afford to buy a house in parts of the region. And so I think those are all still, quote unquote, selling points for Charlotte. But, you know, I do see some of that changing, of course, as we grow and you know, we get more dense. But, yeah, I mean, I would say those things are still in play.
Can you still afford to buy a house?
Well, that's the question. You know, it's getting farther and farther out. Most of the home building is in the region now versus in Mecklenburg County, just because, you know, you can't find the land. And if you can, you can't necessarily build a first-time home buyer affordable home. But, yeah, so dynamics are changing. But I think the sell of the region is still that it's relatively affordable. There's still a lot of amenities. Whether that holds, of course, is a big question, especially when it comes to infrastructure.
One of the questions that we asked in that program, that public conversation we did back in 2009, I think here at Spirit Square, was, is Charlotte likely to remain mid-sized for life, or were we at the time on the way to becoming a major metropolitan area? What would the answer be today?
I think relative to other cities, you know, yes, we are growing a lot faster than other cities, but you also have a lot of other cities in the South that are still growing at a pretty good clip. I mean, Atlanta, all the cities in Texas, I mean, you're still seeing these big influx of people moving to those cities as well. It's not as though Charlotte is.
And are they already bigger than we are?
Yes, a lot. I mean, you know, certainly, you know, Atlanta, you know, the Dallas area. I mean, you know, there's spots in Florida, you know, Miami. Those are all still growing like gangbusters. So the idea that we're somehow going to, you know, surge past Atlanta, I think, is not really realistic.
Do we want to?
In some cases, yes. In some cases, no.
Because, Danielle, you report that we grew by 120,000 residents from 2010 to 2017.
Yes.
That population growth obviously continues every day. We've also seen our skyline completely revamped in that time, at least since the beginning of the century, which is not too long ago, 20 years ago. And we're watching it as places like Fort Mill and Rock Hill grow. Fort Mill, in fact, has been the fastest growing town in the region, which may surprise some people. They would maybe think that we're it, but no, that of the surrounding towns, they're it. Is growth the trend that drives all of the other trends that we're going to talk about today?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you're talking about growth of, you know, people moving out to the suburbs, it is important to a lot of the topics that we've discussed on this show about transportation and, I mean, Fort Mill and, you know, the traffic going down to Fort Mill, and people are always, you know, talking about sort of how they're building lots of homes out in these suburban towns, and there's a lot of concerns about, are we building enough infrastructure? So I think it ties into, you know, a lot of the growing pains, so to speak, that come with the city, especially as we're expanding, like Ashley said, outwards.
Are we building enough infrastructure? We had a minor conversation about this just before the program started. Are we building enough infrastructure, enough heavy infrastructure of the style that would be required by the kind of population, use of roads, etc., that a growing city like this is going to need in 10 years or less?
Well, we have a pretty full plate in terms of infrastructure needs, obviously, right now. I think if you drive down the street, you'll see that there's just absolutely endless road work going on that's connected to different private construction projects. But at the same time, they are trying to figure out how to fund the next phase of the light rail project. They're lacking funds to improve the bus system, for instance. But all of those little pieces all fit, they're not little pieces. All of these major pieces fit together in this infrastructure conversation. It's not just a wave of the magic wand to fix the infrastructure, unfortunately, although I'm sure people would love that. It's not the driving city it was 10 years ago. That's the other thing.
Or 5 years ago, for that matter.
Or 5 years ago.
What do you mean by that?
Well,
I think I know what you mean, but explain it.
I'm sorry. It is the driving city that it was 5 years ago, but it's trying not to be anymore. Rather, leaders are encouraging public transit, walkability, all of these other alternative options that people are not necessarily always ready to take up.
Well, I'm glad I asked you the follow-up, because how I read it.
Here
that.
We go.
When you said we're not the driving city we were 10 years ago, you can't get anywhere anymore. What used to take 10 minutes now takes 30.
Yes.
So that's
if
that's
you look at average commute times, I don't know that average commute times are skyrocketing. I think they're pretty close to what they were about 10 years ago.
People are also moving closer in because it is a pain in the rear to drive from, let's call it south of Fairview into Uptown. So, you see as a result that property values around Uptown are skyrocketing. That's just one of the reasons.
But. So another of the people in that opening montage of voices that we heard said, I think that the city is growing too fast, and if it is, we need to have better roads. Is that a lost cause?
Well, it comes up legitimately every single rezoning meeting. I mean, it's insane. Like, there's always several petitions out in the suburbs, and a lot of community members will come up and say, you can't approve this. This is going to create too much more traffic. Look at the traffic counts that are projected.
And they do it anyway.
Well, and that's the problem, is that there's no true, policy or whatever that with the rezoning case that says here is what is considered quote unquote too much traffic. Here is the line that we cannot cross. So the council has talked repeatedly about, going back and seeing, okay, how can we put in some kind of guardrail to say this is going to generate too much traffic without creating some kind of land use, legal issue, I guess.
And I think, the other thing is that there's less of a willingness to just widen a road or just, do something that basically encourages more driving because of what Katie was mentioning, where, the city wants to encourage the light rail and other forms of transportation. And also, there's a lot of pedestrian deaths on a lot of these, roads where you can go really fast that are really wide. So it's also a safety concern. And so there, I think, is a lot more conversation about, well, do we want to just widen a road or how do we want to address these transportation
issues?
Only have
40 seconds left here, Daniel, but I think it was an article that you wrote that mentioned that I think we've built 84,000 apartments. Is that right? Along the South Boulevard corridor, is that citywide?
That was citywide,
citywide
in the past decade.
So let's say that 34,000 are along the South Boulevard corridor. What are those people supposed to do?
I think the intention
go
is to take
south?
The light rail. I don't know whether that's the reality.
But don't go east or west.
Right.
Okay, we have to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about trends like the urbanization of the suburbs and the merging of Uptown and South End and South End growing in all different directions and density as well as other things in this hour at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that share Mazda's passion that cars make driving matter. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Ashley Faye is with us. She's real estate editor for the Charlotte Business Journal. Daniel Shemtob, economic and growth and development reporter For the Charlotte Observer, Tony Mesilla, editor of the Charlotte Ledger, and on WFAE's Bizworthy segment on Morning Edition on Thursdays, and Katie Peralta, senior editor of the Charlotte Agenda. Let's talk about some of the trends that we're experiencing right now. Growth has been a trend for years, but let's talk about something that several of you mentioned as being a new trend when we asked you prior to the show, and that is the urbanization of the suburbs. What does that mean?
So basically, developers are increasingly kind of building these mixed-use developments out in the suburbs. So you see, you know, office and retail and housing in the same area. And the idea is to almost create like an urban feel, basically.
And you point to what's happening, at least you've written, Danielle, about what's happening in Ballantyne and Waverly. I'm not even sure where Waverly is. But as examples of this type of development, what's happening there?
So in Ballantyne, you know, they did a big rezoning this last year, actually, to build apartments. And it's like 2,000 apartments or something like that. And, you know, obviously they already have tons of office space, but it's more of a suburban office park style. Right? And you have to drive pretty much to get anywhere in Ballantyne. So the goal, I believe they're developing the apartments and the retail on what it was, the golf course, or what is still, I believe it's still open, I'm not totally sure, the golf course. And so, you know, they're basically saying, well, look, this is what we need to do to attract millennial workers, to attract, you know, the people who are going to work at the companies that are going to be in the office park.
Who's saying that, Tony? Who's saying this is what we have to do to attract?
I mean, the
is there a mayor in Ballantyne saying
that?
There
is a self-proclaimed mayor of Ballantyne, but you know, I think that, you know, the thinking is, I mean, among developers, although not 100% of residents buy into this, that if you don't change, you die. You become like an Eastland Mall type of area, you know, where you have to actually do this. You know, you can't just keep that same suburban model. That as the city grows, mm-hmm. that you know, that there are these trends toward people wanting, you know, apartments, say, rather than single family homes, that want walkability, that want to take their dogs, you know, and go to the brewery kind of thing, you know, even in Ballantyne, which we think of now as being more of a South End kind of phenomenon. So I mean, they really sort of want to spread this around, and this is really sort of characteristic of how a city grows, that instead of just concentrating all the new development in one area, let's spread it around to some of these places and give people who live out there some access to some of those amenities.
We used to talk about this all the time on this program. I've forgotten the name of it. There was a guy named, whose last name was Florida, who came here a lot to talk
Richard
about.
Florida?
Richard Florida. And I forgot what he called this, but there's a little city in Florida that's like this. It's a live, work, play. Everything's broken up into city blocks. You can walk to the dry cleaner. You can walk to the pizzeria. You can walk to the movie theater. And there are very few cars on the road because the cars use alleys behind the houses.
It's kind of like Baxter down in Fort Mill, right?
Okay.
Right.
Yes, exactly. And nobody could wrap their head around this, and it's here.
Well, and I think for Northwood, too, I mean, they spent more than $1 billion acquiring Ballantyne. And so they have to get some kind of return on that, obviously. And when you look at all the corporate expansions, relocations, Honeywell, you know, Lowe's Tech Hub, Lending Tree is in Ballantyne now, but is moving to South End. Lowe's Tech Hub is going to South End. Honeywell is going to the Legacy Union site in Uptown. I think the trend is pretty clear that these companies are choosing to go more in the CBD, the Central Business District. So Ballantyne's saying, well, how are we going to, you know, be competitive? How are we going to attract these companies?
So I guess my question of who is saying we have to do this is kind of related to this other question I'm going to ask now, which is this where this is happening, this urbanization of the suburbs, is it happening organically or is it being pushed by developers who say we got to make money and here's how we're going to do it?
I don't get much of a sense that there is a huge groundswell of opposition to this. I mean, Okay. Nobody likes more traffic. Certainly the schools, you know, in South Charlotte in particular is a huge sticking point. You know, why haven't we planned for the schools and why do we have, you know, 30 mobile classrooms in all the schools in South Charlotte? But, you know, I think people sort of realize that the growth is inevitable, and especially as it relates to some of these areas in the southern part of Charlotte, that, you know, these are people who in large part moved to Charlotte fairly recently and are now, I mean, to turn around and say, oh, well, I didn't know this place was going to grow when you just moved there 10 years ago is a little bit, you know, puzzling.
And so this is actually, by organically, I mean, it's actually being grown, it's being done because of need. We need to put these people someplace, right?
I mean, absolutely. And I think that's the argument that a lot of developers and others will say for density. You know, you have a lot where there was maybe 8 single family homes and right. a developer's putting up, you know, 40, 50, maybe more than 100 apartments in its place. And that changes the dynamic of that suburb or that neighborhood. And that's where you see neighborhoods kind of all up in arms about it. But the developer will say, and the city will maybe even say, listen, like we have need for housing. We have to put it somewhere.
I think also the residents of the neighborhood are going, I mean, it's, I thought it was very interesting to see such a welcoming reception of so much rapid, or, you know, so much dramatic change in Ballantyne. People like, you know, 10, 15 years ago moved to Ballantyne for the purpose of getting away from it all. You know, yeah. I want my clear roads. I want to be able to have like a huge yard, all that. To incorporate the idea of density in an area that was seen as like an escape is really quite something in a relatively short period of time. And I think I'm 32. I have friends who've moved out to Ballantyne, not because they want to get away from it all, but rather because that's where they can afford a single family home. You can no longer do that in Southend or Dilworth or, you know, a lot of the time Noda and Plaza Midwood. So a lot of the time it is an option for, you know, young families as well. So to cater to all of those different populations, this really is quite an impressive project, in my opinion, in order to kind of bring about the next chapter of the area.
So you're 32, and that means you weren't here in 1985.
Job on the math.
And we looked at an old photograph of this building that we're sitting in right now, Spirit Square, and of the entrance. This used to be, this glass wall here used to be a doorway into this building. And it was like looking through the looking glass into the 1800s when we looked at that photograph a couple of days ago. This is one of the real success stories of Charlotte, the uptown, because in 1985, there was nothing here but a couple of skyscrapers, and I mean maybe 1, 2, 3 skyscrapers. And when they closed the streets to have a thing called Spring Fest, which was all over the uptown, nobody cared because there would be no traffic on the weekend downtown anyway. Nobody would come. Now we are a 24/7 downtown city, and that spilled into, they started developing South End. That's become a 24/7 area. And the two are now beginning to merge, which I believe is something that city boosters wanted all along. They see South End as an extension of Uptown. Has that merger occurred, Katie?
Absolutely. The first signs of corporate life in Charlotte or in South End came years ago, but now it's not even a surprise. I mean, Lowe's was the biggest and most prominent name to announce a major corporate presence in South End. But then, you know, as Ashley mentioned, LendingTree opted to move from Ballantyne to South End. There's Dimensional Fund Advisors. I have heard developers describe South End time and time again as the hottest neighborhood in the Southeast. You know, I haven't talked to any of the younger residents in South End in a little bit, but I think if you'll talk to any of them, they probably appreciate the walkability. They probably appreciate the amenities. Does South End's cool factor slightly erode with all these corporate, you know, these corporate firms and tons of suits and khakis? Maybe. I'm not really sure about that. But I think the line between like cool, funky, young neighborhood and corporate uptown is definitely blending.
Well, the light rail was positioned as a driver of that kind of development. But if you build it, they will come, and they did. But it's not just the right light rail that's driving that, it seems to me. It's the cool factor. It's the increased population. It's the fact that young people want to live in that environment, and we are supplying that environment, so they're buying into it. And they built all these apartments in South End and places like that.
And another big driver too is really the rail trail. I know it's not super long right now, but a lot of the developers who are building in South End have talked time and again about the importance of that. Looking at like the Beltline in Atlanta, what that's done for development, what that's done for connectivity and multimodal, I guess, kind of ways of getting around town. And the city, of course, now wants to do the pedestrian bridge over 277, which I think is only going to enhance that uptown South End connection and possibly even spur more development on that very edge of South End right before you get onto 277.
Well,
277 has kind of always been seen as the biggest barrier. And I think, you know, at one point, one of the plans, it was a 2010 vision plan, called for like capping 277, which is sort of...
And putting a park on top.
Yeah, completely different right. than, I mean, bridge is a much smaller scale level, and I'm not sure where those conversations are now. But, you know, that's always been sort of the biggest barrier. But like you mentioned, you know, as you you see this development really pushing to the edge of uptown, and right. if you're going to have a bridge, I mean, it's getting closer and closer.
What kind of development is the Blue Line bringing right now on its northern route from 7th Street up toward the university, and at what point will we see what we've experienced in South End?
I think it's going to be accelerated, quite honestly. I mean, you need multifamily, you need more residential kind of first to sort of get that, you know, critical mass, the residents who are living on the Blue Line. And that's what we saw with South End. You know, we saw all the apartments come, we're still seeing them come. And then all the retail at Atherton Mill and Design Center and office came afterward. But, you know, as several of us have reported, you know, Grubb Properties is looking at doing a fairly dense mixed-use project in NoDa right on the 36th Street station, and the Blue Line extension hasn't been open that long. So I think it just shows that it's kind of moving faster.
The character of NoDa has changed dramatically over the years, more than once. I mean, it started out as essentially mill housing, which fell into disrepair when the mills closed, and then it became kind of an artsy location where artists and others would go over there and put up galleries, and people would browse on Friday nights and Saturday nights and go to the bars. Now that's even changed because it's too expensive now.
Yeah.
And that began happening before the Blue Line. Did that change in anticipation of what they knew was coming?
I would say so. I mean, the Blue Line extension was under construction for several years, and I'm sure as soon as that got funded, people were like, developers were speculatively buying. Several apartment projects, including Mercury NoDa and a bunch of others, were built before the Blue Line extension even opened. So yes, I think we've seen that change coming.
I think that's in part. You're also seeing Uptown spread in all different directions. I mean, you're seeing it move out toward Bates Ford Road. You're seeing, you know, moving toward Midtown and, you know, Novant, you know, the hospital down there. So, I think it's... In large part, it is driven, you know, by the light rail, but it's also a factor of, you know, Uptown is just expanding all over.
Has to go somewhere.
And so is South End. You wrote about Loso. Not many people talk about Loso.
nobody wants
There's
to talk
a reason
about
for that.
But we have to call it Loso.
So where is Loso and what's happening?
Lower South End is Loso. It is, yes, a manufactured name, but it's also one that does roll off the tongue quite easily. And it's the area... I guess you can call it kind of south of like the Chick-fil-A area, kind of further down.
Loso sounds better than Scaly south Bark of the Station. Chick-fil-A. I'm just going to throw that out.
I like south of the Chick-fil-A.
Not to the people at Chick-fil-A. They kind of like that.
But again, very close to the light rail, easy walkability. There are breweries cropping up left and right down there. I think there's a push to call it the Brewery District.
Yes.
Isn't all of Charlotte the Brewery District?
Basically, yes.
Where I live.
There's a, not in Cotswold. Just you wait, though. I'm sure that there will be breweries in Cotswold someday.
Soon, yeah.
Cotswold's
sure.
Cool. And it's not just breweries, it's restaurants. There is a bit more multifamily cropping up, not as quickly as we've seen in South End and NoDa, but there's going to be a whole lot of luxurious apartment buildings cropping up.
Is Scaly Bark part of Loso, that area, Scaly Bark and South Boulevard? Because I just read in the paper yesterday or 2 days ago that they're moving the library. They didn't say where. They just said south. And so what's going to happen to that shopping center that used to be a Crossland shopping center? Is that part of the development of Loso?
That library is a relocation, isn't it?
I think it's on south. It's going like not even half a mile. I don't think.
All right.
It's like.
Right. Yeah, but they didn't. You guys didn't say where in the paper.
It was South Boulevard. I put the address. I don't remember what it is.
I didn't see it.
I would just say I know for a fact a lot of developers are looking in that area just for the next project, and this is where it's going. You know, this is where opportunity is. And then, you know, Beacon Partners did say this week they want to double the scope of their project at what they're calling Loso Station. And I think when a developer uses it, that name is just going to kind of stick even more.
All of this speaks to the increasing density of Charlotte, which is what we've been talking about here for years, the need for and in some cases the desire for greater density. With all these people moving here every day, it's inevitable, one would think. But hasn't Charlotte been encouraging this and therefore embracing density, making it a foregone conclusion?
Well, I think especially on the transit corridor, but I think that's just the argument is, where are you going to put it? It has to go somewhere. Density could drive affordability, not necessarily in these luxury apartment buildings, but if you think about, you know, quads or triplexes or duplexes when you're looking at for sale or rental, you know, that could kind of drive affordability rather than a single family home. But, you know, yeah, I think the whole idea is to encourage density in certain areas of town so people and businesses and others can have a place to go.
So when city council looks at the new zoning laws, and they keep saying that our zoning codes were designed for a different time and a different place, and that we need to change them to allow for greater density and different kinds of development, is that happening because we have to do it? We have to have places to put people, or we're doing it because we want to be hip?
It's also what people want. I mean, they wouldn't build these things if people weren't moving into them.
Well, the people that want to move into them want it. I'm not so sure that the people in the neighborhoods being impacted by this.
Well, no, but it's sort of the reality, I think, of how a city grows. I mean, either you put people in sort of dense apartment complexes, high rises, or you know, you're encouraging them to move out to Union County and clog up those roads that we were talking
about.
But
when you put, I don't know what, throw a number out, 48,000 apartments on South Boulevard, you put apartments on, what is 7th Street called when you get out of town?
Monroe
and Elizabeth. When you put apartments on and condominium projects on Providence Road, which is already congested, that increases traffic. Have we planned adequately, can you plan adequately for the increased traffic on those corridors when you're putting up these in what used to be single or two-story, I don't know, 1,800 square foot home neighborhoods, and suddenly you have five-story apartments and all the cars that come with them?
I think that's what the neighborhoods are kind of arguing, that the city hasn't planned for that and, you know, what's going to happen when... Again, you know, the density conversation and you know, encouraging that. But I think that's why the city council has called for sort of taking another look at how they look at traffic in rezoning cases, especially. And they've noted Providence and Park Road many times because those are two of the most clogged.
And the other part of it, you know, we're talking about this urbanization of the suburbs. If you start creating more, if you go out the Providence Road corridor, if you create jobs along that corridor, so people, I mean, we can't assume that everyone's just driving to uptown, that if you can create, the idea is, if you can create those jobs, you know, near the places where people actually live, that you're actually that you're mitigating some of that impact.
So planners have been pushing to find transportation alternatives to buses and cars, like rail, bicycles, bike lanes are being built, scooters are being allowed, walking trails are being touted as a transportation method, not just an exercise environment. And we have more on the drawing board. Is this a trend or is this our future?
I think it kind of has to be. I think that the whole idea is that there are multiple ways for people to get around. There's definitely a big push to increase the amount of bike lanes we have. The Charlotte Rail Trail project has been talked about a lot as far as, you know, having some kind of actual means of getting from, you know, one part of town to another via bike without ever having to get on a road. I think it's just kind of the inevitable part of the conversation.
That's Ashley Fay, real estate editor of the Charlotte Business Journal. She's here with Daniel Shumtop from The Observer, Katie Peralta from the Charlotte Agenda, and Tony Messier from Charlotte Ledger. We're talking about trends in Charlotte impacting your life today and tomorrow, and we will continue in a moment at Charlotte Talks. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We have a gaggle of business reporters, and they're all here to talk about trends in Charlotte. Tony Messier from the Charlotte Ledger, Katie Peralta from the Charlotte Agenda. Do you have an agenda? Ashley Fahey from the Charlotte Business Journal and Daniel Shumtop from the Charlotte Observer. Ashley, you report that there are neighborhoods in Charlotte that have also noticed this trend toward greater density, which we were just talking about. They've complained about it. They're upset with the influx of higher density residential development plunked down amidst their single family home neighborhoods. But you say that, and maybe I misunderstood this because I read it a couple times and thinking I'm not really sure what she's saying here, but you say that a developer recently told you they're becoming more hesitant to build in the suburbs because of how long it takes to get through rezoning, including working through neighborhood opposition. When you say suburbs, you're talking about the close-in suburbs where they're doing infill projects, like along in Elizabeth and places like that?
I think generally South Charlotte. I think we're looking beyond the CBD and even the sort of ring neighborhoods around the CBD. Definitely more like down Providence and, you know, your typical South Charlotte kind of suburbs. Some people have just noted how long it takes. takes to get through a rezoning, you know, with all the kind of community meetings that have to go on, all the processes and all the things that sort of, you know, get negotiated in the process. And that has always been part of the process. And, you know, a lot of the neighborhood groups obviously like having that so they can, you know, go in and say, okay, we're not on board with this. Here's kind of what we want. Can we meet sort of halfway? And the city planning department, of course, encourages that kind of back and forth between the community and the developer. But yeah, some developers have just kind of anecdotally said, you know, there's just so much opposition and there's just sometimes it's just so long and, you know, time consuming and expensive to get through the rezoning that they may just be turned off of doing some of those projects in the future.
I think that's what makes the big rezoning push that they did last year so significant along the light rail, mm-hmm. because now, you know, all of these properties are zoned for this new transit-oriented development districts, which I think we've talked about on this show. And, you know, so there's a lot more density that you can do within those. I mean, there's different requirements depending on where it is, but generally than before, you know, there's a lot more allowance for density.
So the growth and development, in the explosive growth and development and densification of South End is now creeping into areas that have been traditionally part of affordable housing. And I'm talking about Brookhill Village. It's been there for probably a longer time than many people wanted or anticipated, because evidently the buildings that housed people were owned by one company, but the land was owned by another entity. And somehow now they have come to a meeting of the minds, and that is no longer important. And so those apartments are going away, and there's going to be new development there, but some of them will be set aside for affordable housing, still displacing a larger number of people than they'll be able to house. What's going on there right now, Katie?
So this has been, I don't want to call it a thorn in the city's side, but it has been a very complicated project to actually do something about because of this strange ownership structure. The land was owned by an affiliation of C.D. Spangler, and the homes, the land lease, were owned by another entity entirely. And so doing something would require like cooperation with those two. So when the land lease was sold at the end of the year last year, I think December 31st, to a nonprofit affiliated with Reverend Bray McKinnon, he in turn sold the land lease to another developer. He said basically that they're going to set aside a certain number of units for people who make 30% of the area median income, which is like $23,000 or something for a family of four. So it's the very lowest, and that is where the greatest need is for affordable housing. It's not the 80% AMI that we keep seeing a lot of cropping up. So they are saying that they will be tearing down the units that exist there, but they will be given priority. They will be giving priority to the people who live there in order to apply to the new units.
But there will be a decreased number of units available for people who need them, it seems to me. So the other trend that we are facing in Charlotte is one that the mayor has embraced, and that is the search for a way to increase the stock of and maintain the stock that we already have of affordable housing. And we keep having repeats of this, where areas that have been traditionally affordable have suddenly become developed, and although they've set aside a couple of units, a lot of those units are going away. Is this a losing battle?
Well, I think it depends who you ask, of course, because developers are developing to make money, and you don't make as much money if you don't maximize the amount that you charge for renters, et cetera. So they are not doing this out of the goodness of their heart. I think it might seem at some points that if you include affordable housing, I'm using air quotes right now, it is sort of lip service, because what is affordable housing? It really depends on who you ask. For a lot of people, $1,500 a month is not at all affordable. For a lot of people, $700 a month is still too much. So it's about reaching the point where people can still afford to live comfortably, or not, you know, live and survive and not spend their entire paycheck on their rent.
Although Dan Morrill will take issue with this, we've torn a lot of our history down traditionally in Charlotte, although that seems to be another trend that's reversing because of something called adaptive reuse. Reusing old buildings gives the city character. It also seems to attract a certain clientele who want to be in those old buildings. And I'm told that sometimes the rents in these older buildings that have been upfitted are higher than a brand new building.
I mean, it's true. It's some of the new, quote unquote, you know, what is old is new again kind of projects. You know, yeah, they're leasing at very comparable rates to new Class A construction in the CBD. And I think that also speaks to sort of the demand for it. A lot of companies, I mean, Duke Energy is in Optimus Hall, and a lot of companies are seeking that sort of unique character for their workspace. But, you know, the process of getting an old, you know, 1890 mill up to today's standards and, you know, able to have those new office space and retail uses is also very extraordinarily difficult and expensive.
And expensive.
Process.
So are they making it up in the higher rent that people are willing to pay to be in those character-laden buildings?
I think so. I think that's partly why that's commanding sort of a higher rental rate, as well as the demand and the fact that people want to be in those spaces.
Are we going to see more of that? Or are there enough buildings left that we can adaptively reuse?
Well, I think that's the question. I've talked to a lot of developers who specialize in this space, and they say it is getting harder and harder to find the right kind of building in the right area and, you know, the right parking ratio, as we talk about parking a lot. But, you know, they have to have all these sort of factors, you know, line up in a perfect world. And some buildings are just kind of too far gone to be, you know, reused in a successful way.
You just need to put scooters charging stations and bike racks in these buildings. That's all you need.
I think an important thing about adaptive reuse and also just kind of renovating old buildings, though, going off of the you know, talking about higher rents, it's not always like a mill that closed and nothing has been there. I mean, Katie and I went to, you know, an office building earlier this year that was sold, and it actually kind of was adaptive reuse. I mean, I don't think they called it that at the time, but it basically was adaptive reuse. It was some sort of old industrial building, and a bunch of small businesses rented. You know, they paid like $500 a month for pretty, you know, small spaces, and it got sold to a developer who is adaptively reusing it again, I guess.
making it all fancy, yeah. And, you know, upfitted. Okay.
Right, and the rents are going to be much higher, and those businesses don't have anywhere to go.
David Tepper seems to be a trendsetter. The Panthers owner is pushing Charlotte to recognize its position in the sports and entertainment world as the capital of that in the Carolinas. He's moving the football team's headquarters to Rock Hill, increasing the regional nature of the Panthers. He's bringing soccer to town and helping to revitalize the Eastland Mall site, we guess, although there's still some loose ends to tie up in that area. And the announcement that we will be the Major League Soccer League's 30th expansion team city also included his idea to transform the gateway area of the city into an entertainment zone. When you combine that zone with the epicenter and the bars along College Street, is that a trend that we need because young people live uptown? Or do we already have enough of that?
Well, I think with Gateway and the area around the stadium, David Tepper and his team see it as a really huge opportunity because there are so many people who come out for game day. They will have a huge chunk of land very soon when they move the team practice facilities to Rock Hill. It's not very soon, but in the imminent future. And they see the area adjacent to the stadium as a way to kind of drum up a lot of fan interest. It's super walkable. It'll be connected by train via the Gateway Station. So fans traveling from up north will be able to participate in the fun. So this is really going to become sort of the next, I don't want to call it the epicenter because that's not quite right, but you know, if you could compare it to like Nashville's Broadway Street or something like equally as outdoorsy, walkable, cool, that's what they envision. And this is the type of thing that's, you know, quote unquote, necessary to host a major event like a Super Bowl. You have to have a grand area to display things, to kind of showcase the city from, and that is truly like in the shadow of like the city skyline. So it's
and you'll need a new stadium.
Yes.
You wanted to talk, Ashley, about an area that we don't often hear much about and that newcomers may know nothing about, may never have heard the term, and that is the Gold District. We have so many districts in Charlotte now. The Gold District. Put that on the map for us.
Yeah, so it's an area a lot of people might call South End. It's not really South End, though, true historic South End. It sort of runs almost parallel to South Boulevard, South Tryon. It's really, I would say, Mint Street's the main road that kind of runs through what
it's where Little Hardware is.
Sure, yes. And there's a bunch of new restaurants. There's, I think, Bardo's over there. There's a new Pasta and Provision. So it runs parallel to a lot of the activity we're seeing in South End, but it just hasn't taken off quite yet in the same way that traditional South End has.
And it's called the Gold District. Why?
Well, there's a group, a nonprofit that's formed that kind of just wants to, you know, take advantage of Charlotte's history as a gold mining city. And in fact, some of the largest gold mines were historically in the area that is known as the Gold District. I think it's called the St. Catherine and the Rudisill mines were both in that general area. So they're hoping just to kind of like expose that history and trying to get development and businesses involved in
that.
Isn't
this inevitable? I mean, it's part of the trend of densification and growth.
It is. And there's actually a couple of projects that are, you know, being teed up right now, mostly multifamily at this point. But yeah, I definitely see that as the next kind of logical step, especially when you consider what David Tepper wants to do, which is on Main Street in Uptown, and the Legacy Union project right there, too.
So Uptown now has two grocery stores, Whole Foods and Harris Teeter, and maybe more are on the way. I don't know. Retail is still a problem on the street Uptown. That's been a problem since they decided to put it all in the Overstreet Mall back in the 1970s or early 80s. And every holiday season, we hear about the importance of retail to our national economy. And we hear about maybe malls having trouble because people are now shopping online. This is a national trend. What's the impact, Tony, in Charlotte? Are people doing that more and more in Charlotte? Is it impacting the healthy malls that are left?
Sure. I mean, you know, it's a trend around the country that you're seeing that, you know, retailers maybe don't want as much space, you know, as they had before, that large department stores like Sears, you know, are having some, you know, major financial troubles. I mean, so and you're at the same time, you're seeing the creation of all these pop-up shops, these temporary shops that are small that, you know, retailers say, well, maybe we just want it for, you know, a short period of time. So, I mean, at the same time, you have this massive trend towards online shopping. So, you know, it is, I think, a kind of a challenging time for a lot of retail. At the same time, you have online retailers who are seeing some benefits in having physical stores. You know, you have Amazon that's opening physical stores. You go into the Whole Foods, they've got lockers, you know, so you can pick up your Amazon deliveries. So there's a lot going on in retail that's changing. It is putting some pressure on the malls to kind of have to change. I think they're sort of, you know, you go to some of the malls. I mean, you know, Concord Mills, I don't know, you know, that they had a major traffic jams over Christmas,
right?
People trying to get to Concord Mills. There's still a desire of people to go to malls, but definitely the way that the mix of the stores is changing, the size of the stores, there's a lot going on there.
And of course, the restaurant scene in Charlotte is ever changing. I think that's true of every restaurant scene in every city, but we have seen suddenly the Observer's reporting, we have a plethora of Italian restaurants. What's going on with that?
That was the agenda that reported that.
I think excuse me. There's been a lot of those stories.
I'm sorry. I get you confused.
I've been reading a lot of them.
You do? I wanted to add a quick clarification because they did sign a lease for a third grocery store uptown. As I hope people remember, there's going to be a Publix right around the corner here at 10 Tryon, which is going to be a pretty massive project, and it's been kind of long delayed.
Long awaited, yes.
And everyone has known it was a Publix, but they did just sign a lease. Okay. What was the question?
the Italian restaurants.
Italian restaurants. Yeah, they do seem to be in vogue, right?
Yeah.
That's what Kathleen Purvis wrote for us. She's a longtime food writer in Charlotte.
She is.
I think for anyone who closely watches openings of restaurants, this is a trend that has been kind of in your face recently.
Coffee was a trend for a long time. Breweries became a trend. Has the brewery trend peaked?
Again, that depends who you ask.
Come on, Katie.
Have we reached peak brewery saturation? Absolutely not. It seems like there is a new brewery opening all the time. There actually are another 10 opening in the next half year alone. That said, we still don't have the brewery saturation that a city like Portland or Asheville does.
Yeah.
If we did, we would have close to 300 breweries instead of the 40 that we have now.
I think we have five skyscrapers under construction now in Charlotte, five more on the drawing boards. That would be 10 in the next 5 years or 6 years or 7 years. But the nature of work is changing. Technology is allowing people to work anywhere they want to, as a matter of fact. So, and Marshall Brain from NC State has said that the rise of automation and robots and self-driving trucks and cars is going to be the end of jobs in many of our lifetimes. Are we overbuilding? Do we need all these offices?
I mean, I think if you look at the numbers as of right now, I mean, there's still a crazy demand for office space. I mean, you know, they're building them like crazy. I mean, this is a trend toward automation that we've seen for a long time. You know, you see a lot started off in manufacturing, you know, decades ago, and now it's starting to catch up to white collar jobs. So now you know, now people really start to pay attention. A lot of those jobs are going to go away, but they're also changing and evolving. There are going to be new jobs we can't even envision. They're going to be created.
Tony Mesilla is the editor of the Charlotte Ledger and is heard here on Thursday mornings on WFAE's BizWorthy segment of Morning Edition. Katie Peralta is senior editor of the Charlotte Agenda. Ashley Fay, real estate editor of the Charlotte Business Journal. And Danielle Shemtab, economic growth and development reporter for the Charlotte Observer. Thank you all for the hour. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to those who believe a car should stir one's emotions and deliver a heightened state of driving. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.